Movie, film, 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 film,
something annual for us, as it seems we like to open up the year with Nicolas Cage. You're listening to Movie Film.
It's the podcast where we pick a flick and decide if it's a movie or a film.
Yeah.
I'm Nate. And I hear the best thing to do is to feed them to pigs. You gotta starve the pigs for a few days, then the sight of a chopped up body will look like curry to a pisshead. You gotta shave the heads of your victims and pull the teeth out for the sake of the piggy's digestion. You could do this afterwards, of course, but you don't want to go sieving through pig shit, do you?
And I'm Terrell, and I was cursed to be born with the nose of a pig. Now yours... Is it Slumdog Millionaire?
No.
I don't know why I thought Slumdog.
Who's feeding bodies to pigs in that movie?
I don't know. I felt like that was like the game show host was like talking to him in the back room, talking to him about like pigs and using an analogy or something.
No, if I did the voice, you would have gotten it, but I can't do voices.
Oh, what is
it? Actually, you maybe, I don't know if you've seen Snatch, but a lot of distinctive Cockney accents.
I don't think I've seen Snatch.
And whatever Brad Pitt is doing in that movie.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that.
Oh.
So.
Shirtless Brad Pitt.
Now I need to see it.
Like younger. Fist fights also.
Have you ever seen a movie called Penelope?
No.
2006, romantic comedy, Reese Witherspoon, Christina Ricci, James McAvoy.
No.
Yeah, that's where my quote is from. It's from the 2006 movie.
I didn't know James McAvoy was acting in 2006.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. I mean, his first breakout role was Chronicles of Narnia, and that was like 2004.
Wait, which one of those actresses did they pretend had the nose that resembled a pig? Was it Christina Ricci?
It was Christina Ricci.
She doesn't have a pig nose.
No, it was a prosthetic.
Beautiful. Oh.
Yeah, it was a prosthetic.
Did they give her a pig nose?
Yeah, they gave her a pig nose. Because it was kind of like a real life fairy tale. It's really sweet. It's really nice. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we both, you know, have quotes that involve pigs because today's picture is Pig, the 2021 American drama written and directed by Michael Sarnowski in his directorial debut, starring Nick Cage, Alex Wolff, and Adam Arkin, the son of Alan. Follows a truffle forager whose beloved truffle finding pig is stolen. It was released theatrically in the U.S. I didn't know that it was released theatrically, actually. I thought it was just video on demand.
Hmm.
This past summer, July 16, 2021, by Neon, which I bring up just to say, we've praised the distributor A24 a lot on this podcast, but it's time Neon. Neon's got to get flowers. There, too. Just in terms of distribution, just some great ones. The only other Neon picture we've done on this podcast was The Beach Bum, but that's great.
Yeah.
And you know, they distribute a lot of great stuff that might be covered in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Neon.
Thank you, Neon. I'm sure that's how Adam Arkin's gets introduced every time he's introduced.
Alan's son?
He's Alan's son.
Well, yeah, it's also just his name is two letters away from his dad's name.
It is. And Alan and, yeah.
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 This is actually our third Adam Arkin picture.
It is. What? Oh, wow. We did Hitch and we did A Serious Man.
Yeah. He was in Hitch and A Serious Man.
Wow. One a year.
So we've now done as many Adam Arkin pictures as Nicolas Cage pictures because it's our third Cage.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Only our second Alex Wolff after Hereditary.
Mm-hmm. And good again. Good performance again from Mr. Wolff.
Yeah. But who cares about the cast? We got to talk about the crew.
Okay.
Because I think on our last few episodes, I forgot about my segment, Crew Love.
Oh, wow. Yeah, bring it back.
But I love film crews, especially coming back from this podcast after working...
on a crew yourself.
Yeah, on a crew, kind of. In a production office, working with cast and crew.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm on the crew list. I was on a crew. There but you like go. The accountants, they're not on Letterboxd.
No, there's no accountant.
I do get an credit. IMDb page. I'm the 8th Nathan Gross.
Hey, does it say
additional crew?
Does it give you like V111 next to your name?
It's I. What is it?
IV?
Or maybe I'm the 9th Nathan. I think it's IX.
Okay.
So I'm the 9th.
9th, yes.
Yeah. Just some other Nathan Grosses around.
You're number 9. That's funny.
But, yeah, I mean, working, I can say now, I think I was coy before, mm-hmm. before the hiatus. I had a part in the Adam Sandler upcoming feature called Hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Just one of the things I learned in that experience is just how hard crews work. It's so easy to only praise actors, and then once you watch more movies, directors.
Mm-hmm.
But man,
there's people, so much everyone, that goes into
yeah,
it.
There's so much that goes into it, and especially on a film as opposed to a movie. I haven't seen Hustle. I'm guessing it's a movie. We could have that talk eventually if we want.
Yeah.
But I saw how hard people work there. But to do all that work and maintain a creative vision that has like artistic merit, I think it takes so much more than one or two people.
Yeah.
Nick Cage is a producer on Pig, mm-hmm. and was a producer on Mandy, the one we covered at the top of last year.
He sure did.
Producers tend to bring people around for more work. So editor Brett Bachman and makeup artist Pamela Warden, who worked on Mandy, also worked on Pig.
Nice.
We also got a Minari crew member.
Oh.
Yeah, Michael Uguccione did the visual effects for both Minari and Pig. I'm guessing the fire was a visual effect in Minari.
Yeah.
I could see on your face, you were like, wait, those movies have effects?
Yeah. I'm just like, yeah, sure. Like, yeah.
Maybe that's how good this guy is at his job that you
don't
realize.
Even notice it. Yeah.
Just as an aside, since I guess we're still keeping the rundown on hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Guillermo del Toro's second best picture nominee, Nightmare Alley, last weekend. Mm-hmm. And it opens with Bradley Cooper setting a house on fire, and the fire looks so fake. Mm. And it really bothered me.
Maybe he likes that. Maybe he likes that.
No, it's like the amount of fire they needed for the house. They couldn't have done it.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise.
Okay, I get you.
So that's the crew that have worked on movies and films that we've covered before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's get into Pig. Yeah.
Yeah.
You picked this one.
I sure did.
Why?
Oh, because I enjoyed it so much when I first watched it. Mm. I haven't been watching a lot of movies. I've been watching a lot of Survivor. like a lot. And this is one of the ones that I watched that like really stuck with me. And when it came time to come back, I was like, this is one that I want to talk about. It's well, just like, it kept coming to the front.
Checking my letterbox, I see that the first time we watched this was the same day that we watched The Tragedy of Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for not picking that one.
Yeah.
Because that would be homework.
I mean, it definitely crossed my mind, but I was like,
I can't talk about Shakespeare.
I couldn't do it. I can't. Yeah, it would be homework. We'd have to like break it down and
Talk about Shakespeare and Joel Cohen, and like they're both doing so much,
yeah.
And like all the people that worked on that movie, mm-hmm. that did so. Oh man,
yeah. I would have some good words to say about it though if we did talk about it.
Well, we could bring back the rundown if you want.
Yeah, yeah, and say some good things about it, some interesting things about it, some bad things about it.
Hmm.
You know.
Oh yeah, the Frances McDormand disrespect.
Not
I'm the only I keep hearing people not liking her in that movie, but
it was just something was like off for me, and I guess a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just need to watch it again just to see it. But yeah, it just was not connecting for me. And that's the rundown.
Tragedy of Macbeth is a film.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, that's the rundown. Pig, Shall we begin?
Yeah.
May I begin?
Yeah. Are we going to run that trailer?
No.
No.
I thought we're not doing that anymore.
Oh. We're not doing it anymore.
I don't know. I had some technical difficulties on that Halloween episode.
Yeah.
And then I think I skipped it for Green Knight.
No, you did it for Green Knight.
Did I?
You did it.
Oh, man. Well, I already read the first few sentences of the Wikipedia article, which I usually save for after the trailer. But since you asked so nicely.
Thank you.
Please enjoy the trailer for Pig.
For a truffle pig.
They advertise it like it's a John Wick, but it's not a John Wick.
No, that's a bit of a disservice. That's probably the first thing I heard about it. It was like, this is Nicolas Cage's John Wick.
When John Wick, mysterious guy, the puppy stole, he's got the dead wife and the puppy stolen.
Dark brooding, you know.
And he goes to get the puppy back.
Quiet.
And we learn about who this guy was and the set of skills he has.
Yeah, but it's this not the same. This has similar
stuff. But it's not an action movie.
It's no.
Barely a revenge movie.
Barely.
It's something else. In fact, I would say it's not a movie. It's a film.
Ooh.
Did I say that right away?
At the beginning.
Well, let me explain.
Yeah.
Over the course of this podcast.
Nice.
Why I believe Pig's a film.
All right. I want to hear it.
We begin with the opening credits, which is a trend I've noticed with films. They use small font. That's like a new thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not a new thing, but I wrote it down. It was an observation I had.
The small font.
I feel like big movies have big fonts.
Mm-hmm.
Small films have small fonts. This isn't always true across the board,
right?
It's like it's understated,
mm-hmm,
right off the bat.
Yeah, I mean the small font and the small credits help with how quiet this movie starts off.
Mm.
You know, it's real quiet, it's real subtle. I think if it was too big, then it would just it'd clash.
Yeah. Also, they keep that graphic design for the title cards because this is a film in three chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Another hallmark of a film is that it's broken up into chapters. Yeah. I'm trying to think of a movie that does that, but I don't know. That'd be so annoying a movie to do. It's like, why do you have chapters? You're a movie.
Right. I'm going to think of it while we're doing this podcast and be like, dudes, where's my card at? You know?
That's like episodic, but it's not chapters.
No. That was like a dumb example. Okay. Like, that was just like not an example at all.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not a film.
Yeah.
Definitely not a film. First shot is this overhead shot of the river. We see the water, waves, very poetic,
mm-hmm,
very artsy. Mm-hmm. But then it like fades pretty seamlessly into the shot of hands underwater. Robin's hands, Nicolas Cage's character.
Mm-hmm.
Washing truffles.
Yeah. His pig, who, when you think of pig, you probably think of like a pink pig, you know?
Babe.
I think a babe. Yeah, but this pig is brown and hairy.
Red, no?
Red? I thought it was brown. I like
orange.
Orange. It's kind of. It's like it's like a light brown. It's like,
it's not the pig you would think you were going to see.
Yeah, when
you
watched the movie. It wasn't the pig I thought I was going to see.
But maybe truffle pigs are different.
Are different.
Or this is unique to the Pacific Northwest region.
Yeah.
This is a very Portland film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, cute pig.
Cute brown pig.
A little bit of time with that pig, but the film does a good job of, you know, you gotta have some good moments with the pig so that the rest of the movie where he's like, I want my pig back.
Yeah, you definitely
get it.
You definitely get a sense of the connection between the two and like the you know, we're seeing what they do every day and how they actually care for each other in this way, in a way that a pig can care for a man, you know?
Yeah, man's best friend if we didn't eat them.
Right.
Pigs have to be better than dogs. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
Controversial opinions. Pigs just seem so cool.
Oink.
Dogs are cool too.
We meet Amir, who comes in very loud and very proud.
Before we meet Amir,
okay,
we get our first meal.
Okay.
It's a truffle pig. We got truffles. We washed them. And we get our first title card. Chapter one is Rustic Mushroom Tart. The chapters are named after the meals that they eat in the chapters. Mm-hmm. And we see Rob, or our mysterious man. We don't even know his name yet. Preparing that rustic mushroom tart, and it looks great.
Yeah.
And I love how the filmmaker shows the food prep, the cooking. It's very delicate, very like you can feel it.
It's
like
very tactile. It's very heavy. And delicate at the same time. It's like, you know, like, I mean, these are like supposed to be professionals cooking, and so there feels like there's a sense of like purpose and just like love in all of the cooking scenes, I think, or at least all of the cooking scenes with our protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's very like what's the word, like, it's not direct or assertive, he's just very intentional with everything that he's doing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
there's
definitely
a lot of intent in inside of him.
You gotta have that if you're gonna survive in the woods.
Yeah.
And then actually, before we meet Amir, I do want to note, because it happens twice in the first few minutes, that he whistles for his pig. That's how he gets the pig's attention. The first time is to get the pig out to hunt for truffles. Or no, that's the second time. And the first time is to food's ready. Come get your food, pig.
Right. Yeah.
It's this whistling sound cue. He doesn't speak to the pig. He just does the whistle. Calls for it.
Yeah, not a lot of words are said.
But I like how that whistle establishes their connection. That he can just not know where his pig is necessarily, but just whistle somewhere in the woods. The pig will come.
Yeah. It'll hear and come back to him.
They're friends.
Mm-hmm.
Then we meet Amir, who up until this point, I mean, his entrance,
it's loud.
It's so loud. It's not clear before Amir enters the film that it takes place in modern times.
Mm-hmm.
It could be any time, by the way, that Nick Cage's character's living, cooking, truffle hunting.
Easily.
Mm-hmm.
Easily.
He's definitely a Luddite. But not Amir. Amir's this young hotshot.
Yeah.
Pulls up with this baby blue blazer.
And this
sports car.
This yellow Corvette.
Sunglasses.
Yeah, blasting music. He sounds like the city. Like he brought the city into the woods.
Great, great performance from Alex Wolff, who I have not seen play a character like this at all. Like, first of all, an adult.
An adult?
Yeah.
I didn't recognize him at first.
It's crazy that this and M. Night Shyamalan's Old were his two 2021 releases, because he plays a child that is even younger than him.
Right.
In Old.
He's starting to, like, switch. He's starting to make that switch.
And showing his versatility, for sure. I think he does a good job of inhabiting this character who just comes off like an asshole at first, but then over the course of the film gets real emotional.
Yeah, opens up and gets vulnerable. He does have concerns for Robin, but they seem superficial. More so, like, he doesn't want to find him dead. you know, he doesn't want to be the one to find him.
Yes, he's his seller. He buys
the truffles.
Truffles off of Robin. Rob, as he's called right now.
Mm-hmm.
And sells them to a Portland area restaurateurs.
Rob,
but, so yeah, he's only concerned about the business.
Yeah, he's only concerned.
That's motivation for that relationship.
Rob has no words for his concerns and just walks off, goes back into his place with what his truffles were traded for, which were goods.
Not only does Rob not have concerns for Amir's words, Rob doesn't have words for Amir's words.
Yeah.
He's silent.
He's silent.
He doesn't talk.
Yeah.
But he gets the point across that he doesn't give a fuck about what Amir has to say.
Yeah.
Pig's restless one night.
Yeah.
Robin assures Pig that it's coyotes. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. Comforts him. On the rewatch, I noticed this big, nasty pit stain in Rob's long johns.
Mm-hmm.
Some nice costumes. Like, yeah, that's what that dude would wear. He wouldn't have a new pair
of
elongated
same,
Jonathans.
The same pair that he washed in maybe the creek.
Mm.
You know, once a month.
Yeah, the creek doesn't get pit stains out.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not just coyotes.
No. It's some thieves who have come to take the pig.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat Rob unconscious. And, you know, the last thing we hear of the pig is it's squealing.
Mm.
And it, like, really, like, lingers on that. Like, the pig is in, like, extreme panic.
That pig feels things.
Yeah, it has feelings. It knows that something is wrong. It is calling out for Rob, but Rob has been knocked out.
I like how understated this scene is. Like,
it's so dark.
Very much the inciting incident, but also there's not... It's not action-packed.
No, it's
like
quick.
They knock him out, but it's more functional. It's it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reveling in the violence or the
yeah.
He hears people coming through the door, so he gets ready, but he can't quite put up a fight, even
right.
though he tries.
Yeah, and we don't even see the people at all.
We don't see the people, but we hear their car. The scene ends. We got those squeals, but then we also hear these overbearing car noises in the mix of the car speeding away,
mm-hmm.
and it's that juxtaposed against the wood setting. It's very we're coming in from the city, fucking shit up.
Yeah.
Just used well in the mix. It's a real disturbance to the natural peace.
Mm-hmm.
So now the next morning,
he wakes up in a pool of blood. Mm. And just gets right in his car, which
before he tries to muster up the energy to whistle, but he can't.
Oh.
It's so sad. And that's why I brought up the whistling earlier.
Oh, okay.
And I have another whistling point later that I noticed this time.
Okay.
He can't whistle. He's too beat up and too tired. And he knows the pig's not there.
Yeah. So he tries to go out to the city himself, but his car probably hasn't been touched in years.
Yeah.
And when he, you know, tries to drive off, it just cuts off.
He cranks the generator. He takes the tarp off, but still does not make it out of the
woods.
Doesn't
make it out of there. He ends up walking to a diner close by. This gives us a bit of like a sense of time because he asks for someone and the waitress answers that
Marge died 10 years ago.
Exactly. So we know that he's been missing or he's just been out in the woods for 10 years
than 10 years. Yeah. And he hasn't been in contact with people for 10 years, at least 10 years.
Yeah.
It seems the one person he knew
is now dead.
He asks for a phone. She asks, are you buying anything? He says no. She begrudgingly offers him access to a phone
mm-hmm.
because, I mean, look at him.
Right. He calls Amir.
Who isn't the type of guy to park the car, head inside, say, oh, hey, Rob, I'm here.
Yeah.
Let's go. How are you? No, he honks the horn several times from outside in the parking lot while the car's still running.
Mm-hmm.
He's
young and impatient.
Yeah, but it's also this this more like noise pollution and like, I'm just going to stay in my car. I'm not going to be personable.
Mm-hmm.
I find this film is really mourning the loss of human connection. So we're going to start with our two characters not really connecting at all.
Mm-hmm. The radio sequence is pretty good because what they're talking about is music. Music from 200 years ago. That was beautiful. That'll be beautiful 200 years later.
Yeah, it sounds like David Attenborough, like Planet Earth type of narration.
And we learn a lot about Rob throughout this film. And we the second time watching it, you can understand why hearing that would, you know, leave a bad taste in his mouth, seeing what he believes is going to happen eventually. You know, 200 years later, you think we're going to be important, you know? That doesn't sit well with him. But for Amir, it's just noise, you know what I mean? We're so used to noise and people talking and music playing all the time that, you know, probably doesn't even faze him. He's probably not even taking it in the way that Rob is taking it in. So they have this little back and forth with the like turning on and off the radio, which Rob wins. That's where it cuts off. Like when he cuts it off and Amir is just like jaw dropped looking at him like, you're touching my radio.
Yeah. So they visit, their first stop is to visit Mac, another truffle hunter. She assumes that their buyers coming in.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I know you should know not to bring buyers here,
mm-hmm.
but they're not buyers. He just wants his pig back. In fact, Rob says, they took my pig, and then the camera like moves in. It gets some real momentum to it,
mm-hmm.
and then cuts back to Mac, who Amir wasn't really getting anywhere with her.
Mm-hmm.
But then as soon as he mentions they took my pig, she says, what kind of pig? And then they do the reverse shot, and it's just camera movement that wasn't there in the scene earlier, mm-hmm. and just really adding momentum. Oh, fuck, they took a truffle pig. Let's go.
Yeah, it starts to move very quickly from this point on. And also, I really like that she took him very seriously right away. Like, it wasn't like she was trying to hassle them. She was like, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. We're going to go straight to them. And they do. They go to the people that stole his pig. And you think that's the movie, right? That's like what we want. We want to get to the thieves. And they're like, we don't have the pig anymore.
Yeah, they were just a couple of drug users living
A bunch of goons, a bunch of henchmen pretty much that did the handiwork of someone else. And they didn't ask any questions really.
No, and they all the information they could say is they sold it to a guy with a car that was, what was it? And then the other guy says, black.
Yeah, that's it.
So they know the guy was in downtown Portland, so they're going to go into the city.
Yeah.
I like this entrance into the city. Portland's got a lot of bridges,
mm-hmm.
and we see one of them.
Yeah.
First, this wide shot, then Nick Cage's face through the car window, and then like the bridge from if you were in Nick Cage's position almost looking up, but it's one of those I wish I knew how to describe bridge architecture.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like it looks like what were those not connects, but it was like a mechanical toy thing from like the 80s or 70s.
Whoa.
Erector sets.
Erector sets?
It's like a bridge that looks like a massive erector set.
Okay.
So it's just like this gangly metal with holes drilled in, and like it's not a beautiful sight for Rob, and so for us, it's like almost horrifying. Like, look at what industry did.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to a very Portland outdoor music venue, bar, grill, restaurant thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I say very Portland because I was in Portland for 3 days, so I know.
So you know you're in Portland.
I was at a place, like I saw places like that. A lot of food trucks, a lot of people that look like all the characters in this. It's they got it They did it well. coming from someone who spent 3 days in Portland. but we just go through the whole venue until we get to the back room to visit Edgar.
Mm-hmm. We don't really know who Edgar is, but Edgar knows who Rob is because he looks at him like something he hasn't seen in a long time. And he says, like, you used to be important. You know, you used to, because he's like, I want my pig. He's like, you used to be important. Mm-hmm. Your name used to mean something, but now you don't even exist.
Yeah.
So he gives him nothing. But Rob knows where to go.
Hotel Pork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love the names of the places in this movie. Hotel mm-hmm. Pork.
Amir characterization is that he's really, really young, very green, and doesn't have the, like, he just doesn't have the support or love or, you know, that would build him up. Mm-hmm. And so he's very just, like, standoffish.
Yeah.
Even just, like, being seen with Rob, he think is embarrassing. He has no idea who Rob is, you know, and, yeah, you know,
there's
what that means.
There's that brief moment after Rob leaves Edgar's whatever room of the set that scene was in.
Yeah.
It's not like the back office. It's just, like, the whole indoor part, I guess.
Yeah.
After Rob leaves, there's a brief exchange between Edgar and Amir where Edgar's like, do you even know his full name?
Yeah. And then
he's just suggesting to Amir, hey, this weird guy you've been buying truffles for however many years.
He's somebody.
He's someone.
Yeah.
He was someone.
Yeah.
And like, maybe you should look into that and respect him accordingly.
Right. Maybe you should start asking the right questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Amir has the connects. He just doesn't want to use them or know how to use them. Mm. And Amir gets them into the place.
Yes.
But they're going down to the basement. And Amir starts to ask questions, but Rob isn't really giving him anything. Rob has been very quiet. He's just been like, take me here, take me here. Can you do this? And he admits to Amir that he's just his driver. And that's when Amir is like, all right, fuck you. I'm out of here.
Yeah, actually, I really like the dialogue of that scene. Amir says, I want to be in the loop. And Robin says, there's no loop. You're just my ride.
Yeah.
There's no loop. But that comes back with, like, whose loop are you in
mm-hmm.
when you do things?
Yeah.
But there's no loop.
There's no loop.
And then Robin's, like, kind of sick of, you know, information being withheld, and then says, you probably fuck your pig. Like,
yeah.
Just as part of, like, this tirade he goes on. But then the only part of it that Robin responds to is,
I don't fuck my pig.
I don't fuck my pig.
Yeah. And then he gives them a little bit more information about where they're going, this place, and what it used to be, and how when we get to this fight club, don't do anything. Like, let everything happen, no matter what happens. And this is the first time he's giving him a heads up on anything.
Yeah, it used to be a hotel that they built on top of, but they'd never filled the sub-basement. So it's all still there. It's just buried, which I think bears some symbolic weight in terms of the character of Robin Feld.
Mm-hmm.
He's still there. He's still there.
Just covered with dirt and blood.
Him and perhaps his world
mm-hmm.
Is still atop Portland somewhere.
Somewhere, yeah. Still underneath there. Still going on.
This picture could have leaned more into the, like, Portlandia aspects of that city.
Mm-hmm.
And there are funny moments, like Amir's when he first shows up is just hilarious, and then of course Nick Cage in the diner, but I don't know, that'd be too easy, I guess. They don't do that.
Yeah.
Feels more real than, I don't know, that stuff definitely exists in Portland, as I can attest to.
Right. It shows Portland in a different light,
just
literally.
Just impressed, yeah. I admire films that are very steeped in their setting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool that they... Actually, I don't know that they shot in Portland. I assume they did.
Right.
They convinced me...
That they shot in Portland.
And I know Portland.
Because you went there for 3 days.
This underground fight ring for restaurant workers...
Interesting.
Is, actually a plot point in the Pete Davidson, Judd Apatow movie, King of Staten Island.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that movie's too long, and that's like a whole avenue they go down that doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
And it's annoying, and I didn't like that movie that much. But I guess this is a thing. Because that was like a New York thing.
Right.
This is a Portland thing. I guess like underground restaurant fight clubs
are a thing.
Is a thing, or at least was a thing that was exposed once, and then screenwriters read that article and wrote it into their movies.
Right.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's fucked up.
Right. It seems so intense for chefs to, you know, after they clock out to go fight one another, literally.
And then people place bets on them.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting. They call it Hotel Pork, and it's like pork is what you get when you kill the pig, so that people can then eat it. And then, you know, you got these chefs that have the great talents that could be doing something, but no, we just make them like punch each other so we could keep profiting off of them to get pork.
So he walks in the room and everyone shuts the fuck up. They're just like, whoa, is that who I think it is? And he writes his name on the board so they know who it is in big, bold letters. Yeah. Robin Feld. They know who it is.
The fighters that were fighting, when they come in, they stop because Edgar whistles for them to stop.
Oh.
Yeah.
This was the
other whistle part that I was going to bring up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
This was the part when we were watching it, I got excited. I was like, oh, I'm noticing things.
Yeah. It's like, not only was he a part of this, but he might have been running it.
Mm.
Or just like a really big name.
Oh, no, no. It's not Rob whistling.
Oh.
It was whoever was, I think Edgar whistles for the fighters to stop.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
when
yeah.
Rob walks in.
Mm-hmm. He also whistles for it to stop.
Edgar.
Yeah.
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 So it's like the whistle being used for different purposes with Nick Cage. With Rob and the pig, it was, hey, come here. I made food for you. Or come on, let's go do our thing where we get truffles together, even though I might not really need you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is...
A whistle to stop the violence.
You are my pigs. You fighters are my pigs. You're here to make me money. You do things on my command. Here's a commandeering whistle.
Mm. Okay.
I found a lot of tension between like Robin and his world and the world.
Mm-hmm.
Society.
I don't know who his opponent is. Must have been someone from his past. Someone who really wanted to beat the crap out of Robin. Because that's exactly what he did. And Robin didn't fight back. In fact, I think Robin's hands was tied behind his back. And there was a timer on there. I think he had to last a whole minute.
I like the way the ticks of the timer is used in the sound mix.
Mm-hmm.
Like right before the fight. And you're like, is he going to fight back? And you just hear tick, 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 tick. Punch, yeah. Tick, 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 tick. You're getting punched still. You're not fighting back.
You know, and Amir is just watching. He doesn't like it, but he listens to Rob.
Yeah, right. If it was his plan, he would probably say, okay, now you come in here and kick everyone's ass.
Yeah. Yeah, he would.
Yeah.
He would.
Just back to this timer. This is like the last thing that I read too much into.
Okay.
But props to whoever was the set dresser for the scene. Whoever found the prop of the timer, because there's like a circle, but it's the two ends aren't connecting. So it's like a broken circle or like the part of a spiral, like on the face of the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, to me, like related to the there is no loop. because if it was a circle, it would be a loop.
Wow.
But it's not. It's a spiral.
Mm-hmm.
It's the two sides, and they can't connect. And also, that ties into the whole thing with Amir and his father.
Mm-hmm.
They can't connect.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. Pig's a film.
Wow.
See, you're... this is why I want to start saying it at the beginning.
So you can start saying
so I can do shit like that. And also, I don't have to keep saying, in this picture.
In this picture.
And so we get to chapter two.
Yeah.
Mom's French toast and deconstructed shouts. Did you have more from the fight scene?
I was going to say, at the end of the fight, Edgar gives him a piece of paper. And that's how it ends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works. The plan of not kicking out everyone's ass, which is what John Wick would do. What Amir would want Rob to do.
Yeah.
I love Rob's power in this. It's
almost
it's almost like a psychic power. Like, I'm on a different plane.
Yeah.
I'm playing. You guys are all playing a game.
Uh-huh.
I see you playing your game.
Yeah.
I hope you're having fun.
I'm not going to play it.
I'm not part of that. Yeah. I want my pig back.
I want. That's all. That's it. So whatever you. Yeah. He's really passive, but strong in his passiveness.
Yeah. So part two is Mom's French toast and deconstructed shallots, which are two things that would not go together.
Exactly.
Which is great.
I don't think there's any French toast in this scene, except for...
No, start with the French toast.
Does it?
The first thing we get.
Oh, I thought his advice was you should turn that stale bread into French toast.
So no, he made French toast with fresh bread.
Oh, okay.
And the scene ends with him suggesting he should use stale bread.
Gotcha.
Right before that, though, with the chapter title in that small filmic font,
mm-hmm.
I noticed that the title card is over an image of the woods. There's like a lot of fog and the trees. Even though we're in Portland now, we cut back for a split second to the trees just to take it back, to take the audience back to Robin's world
mm-hmm.
for just a sec before we descend even further into modernity.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in Amir's apartment.
Yeah.
He's cooking. He's cooking for
Rob.
For Rob, and he is apologetic because he's not much of a cook.
Yeah.
And we hear the microwave button.
So now that he knows his whole name is Robin Feltz, over breakfast, he opens up about a memory he has of his parents. His parents didn't always get along. Like, he didn't grow up like in a picture-perfect home with his mom and his dad. But he remembers one night when they went on a date night, and they came back so happy. You know, it felt different this night. They came back happy, and they talked about this meal for the rest of their marriage, or while they could communicate, and how important that meal was to, you know, to him and to his parents, and that, you know, that meal came from Robin.
It was Robin's restaurant.
It was Robin's restaurant.
Now that we're calling him his full name. I love that the movie's called Pig, and then the main character's name is also an animal.
Three letters? Oh. Oh, no. Robin?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And also, he's the one that gets robbed.
Yeah. Rob gets robbed. Robin Hood? And then, in turn, Robin opens up. Woo. We learned that he's a bit of a nihilist, and he doesn't believe that...
I wouldn't say that. I feel like a nihilist doesn't care about anything. Maybe pessimistic.
Okay.
I feel like... Well, he's definitely a broken man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... His opening up is a window into his...
Into his
super
dark,
depressing...
Yeah, his dark soul.
But also, he's not wrong.
No, he's not. He's also just very correct.
He's talking about how Portland gets earthquakes, and they're going to keep getting earthquakes until they get the big one,
mm-hmm.
and most people are going to die from that.
Yeah.
And the ones that don't, the bridges will collapse, they'll have nowhere to go. They'll, mm-hmm. and they'll only have like a little bit of time before they look up and then see the tidal wave.
Yeah.
That came and, because of the earthquake.
Yeah. And he says that this has happened before. We were all at the bottom of the ocean before, and it's going to happen again. And that type of like it happened before, it happened again. It does, what we do here doesn't matter. Or if it does matter, then it,
we're not helping.
It better be honest. Like, it better be true. It better be from you and not be on some, like, people-pleasing, you know.
Playing the game. Like, how Robin describes his dad is, like, well, he does, like, a sound and then the hand motion. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like a jet. It's kind of like a plane. Like, he just, like, takes off. Like, he's like that. He's a straight shooter, his father, you know.
He's just entrenched in the rat race.
Yeah. It's about that every day,
yeah,
with his father, and yeah, Robin has left that behind because, you know, we don't know it yet, but yeah.
Yeah, so that whole monologue, the camera's just fixed on Nicolas Cage's face.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just take a moment to talk about the performance of Nicolas Cage in Pig.
Oh yeah, let's do it from top to bottom.
Not necessarily from top to bottom.
But
what an actor. And he doesn't do his thing. He's not doing his thing in this movie.
He yells once, and it's a really good yell.
Well, yeah.
like that dude, Nick, yell. That Cage yell that we got in, like, Mandy. It's in here, but it's, like, really quickly. And you're just like, oh, there it is. But he's so reserved. He has such a reserved performance.
And it's all presence.
Mm-hmm. It's all direct. It's all, like, looking you straight in your eye and talking to you.
Well, no, it's not looking anyone in the eye until he absolutely has to.
Oh, but that's like his finishing move.
But when he gets to that point, you know what? I'll look you in the eye and I'll use my psychic power, which is, this isn't a superhero movie, but I'll just tell you what it is.
Yeah.
Because I know what it is.
Yeah.
And you have no idea what it is. And when I tell you that this is what it is.
Yeah.
It's over.
It's over. That's it. Yeah.
It's such a strong character. Such a strong performance.
Mm-hmm. Because it's like he's so grounded. He's so earthly as a character.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. So the camera's on him during the whole monologue, except at the very end, we get a reverse shot of just Amir, like, what the fuck? Because he just got told what it is.
Yeah. Amir has that look on his face a few times, and it's good every time, where he's just like, wait, what?
Well, yeah, that's definitely one of Alex Wolff's strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's like his hereditary character, right?
Yeah. Just like what reaction.
What the fuck is going on? Why is my mom like this?
His very good quiet moments where he doesn't need to say anything.
Yeah. So I like how we get that dumbstruck reaction. And then it's like the camera's in the corner of his apartment with the floor to ceiling glass windows.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nice, but very empty.
Yeah. Very blue. It's very,
like,
cold.
It's like, for what?
Yeah.
It reminds me. No. Well, I already started this sentence. It reminds me of Phoenix's audition song from Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah.
Like, you want to be somebody special, but what happens when you get there?
Yeah.
What's your plan? What are you even doing?
Mm-hmm.
You're not working just to survive, so why? That seems to be his life. And then there's another scene. I'll tell you about when I recover my notes.
I can tell you what it is. Cool. Robin visits his old home.
Yes.
When we first saw this, you said something about Halloween, or you said like his Michael Myers, like you said Michael Myers coming back home, and it made me laugh. And it made me laugh again when I watched it, because it does have that feeling to it. There's something about it, because, you know, we just watched Halloween Kills not too long ago, and it's about him coming back home. And I think there's like maybe just like similar shots, and then Nicolas Cage being an older white man with white hair and that beard, that
slow walking in this environment. He doesn't,
the out of focus into focus of it, and you're just like, oh yeah, I see that connection. That's kind of funny.
Yeah,
But it's a very sincere moment, and
kind of. But it starts as a bit of a joke because the cut into that scene is first Amir's trying to get the reservation at his dad's restaurant,
mm-hmm.
which he can't because their relationship is complicated. But then he can when he name drops his friend. He says, "My friend."
Oh yeah. We didn't even talk about his pep talk.
I know. I was gonna go work backwards a little bit because I was gonna say you also missed what I've said on this podcast before is one of my favorite things when characters are talking to themselves in the mirror.
Yeah.
And this is a wonderful one.
Mm-hmm.
He's psyching himself. It's Amir psyching himself up to ask for the reservation at his dad's restaurant.
Yeah.
He says, I'm the king of the jungle.
I'm the lion. You know what I mean?
My dad has his own thing, but I have my thing,
I'm the man. You want that top primo shit? You come to me, not my father. And it instantly cuts to him being that really just like, you know, kind of like shy, stuttering, jittery guy that he actually is, where he can't be as like strong and direct as Robin is and kind of gets talked over. And
oh, yeah, he asks for the reservation. He says, the guy he's asking says, you know, it's your dad's restaurant, right? Why don't you ask him?
Right.
Kind of knowing.
Mm-hmm.
But then he says, my friend Robin failed. So that gets him in.
And the thing is, he can't ask his father because his father would probably say no. You can't eat there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he says, my friend Robin failed.
And
then it cuts.
Yeah.
Robin,
mm-hmm.
who's this very important person that they're like, they say there's no reservations, but he named Josh Robin Feld. Now he gets the reservation. So let's see who this guy is. Cut to Michael Myers, essentially.
Michael Myers, essentially. Yeah. This cut. So we learn it's his own house. He has this moment with a little kid with a hand pan instrument.
Yeah, I did Google hand pans. You can make your own.
Mm-hmm.
That's something about that instrument.
Oh, cool.
That I think ties into the film.
Mm.
You don't need to go out and pay a musical instrument production company hundreds of dollars so that you can learn the songs that you hear on the radio in between commercials. No, just make your own, and then it's very tranquil, meditative.
Mm-hmm.
Kind
of sounds like a still drum. Like a mini still drum.
Yeah, exactly.
He used to have a persimmon tree that isn't there anymore.
Another thing that ties into
this
explanation, the child asks, what's a persimmon?
Yeah.
So cute.
Yeah, so cute.
The explanation, it's this fruit that you can only eat it if it's ripe.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get there, but when you get there, it's worth it.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to the fact that that tree's not even there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Just all the shortcuts that are taken, and
I think
things aren't what they are. And
I think of Amir as a persimmon. He's full of tannins. Mm. You know, he's so full of tannins. He's just not ripe.
That's great.
Yeah, I think he gets a little bit more towards the movie, but like,
yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So they get reservations.
The theme is explored through the symbols and the characters and the movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's a film. It's a meal. That's what this is.
It's a meal.
This is a hearty three-course meal.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised to learn that this was a food movie.
Mm.
I didn't think it was going to be a food movie. I was very happy that it was a food movie.
Mm.
I love scenes with food. There's something about scenes that revolve around food that are just like really nice. And you can get a lot done in them. We go to you're a dicey? You're a dice?
Eurydice. No, I don't know Greek. It's Orpheus's dead girlfriend or wife.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to bring her back.
Okay.
Remember that.
Okay.
Well, first of all, this is where the deconstructed shallots
come in.
So this works on a couple levels. First, when you're watching it the first time, if you really want to think into it, who was this figure in Greek mythology? She was dead. Orpheus was trying to bring her back.
Mm-hmm.
It's the deconstruction of the food. That's why they would name it that.
Right.
But then we'll get to some other
layers. Interesting. Of that layered cake. That is a layered cake. It's a lasagna.
This is the scene.
Oh, it is the scene.
This is top five scenes of the year. Yeah. It's the best scene of the year, because that's not even a thing I consider usually what was the best scene this year.
Yeah.
But this scene is so good.
It's really good. It's
and it begins with just the dialogue. We don't even start the scene in the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
As Rob walks away from his old house,
mm-hmm.
it's just a close up on his face.
Mm-hmm.
At dusk, walking through a residential Portland street,
mm-hmm.
his face is still bloody. And then we just hear this voiceover. We see later when we finally cut to the scene that it's the waitress mm-hmm. doing her spiel.
Doing her thing, but very it's like, just like serious. She has a smile on her face, but she's almost robotic.
Well, yeah, she's saying a thing, and it's like that bullshit fine dining thing where it's like locally sourced and only the finest ingredients. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's like even more than that.
And it's like, it's so fancy and so, you know, precious, you know, that it's marinating in like smoke. It has like a smoke dome that they have to take off. And then what's there is like this tiny, it's like a tablet.
Yeah.
it's like a tablet with some like berry gravy on it or something.
He takes one bite. Rob takes one bite and says, I'd like to talk to the chef.
Yeah.
And he wanted to talk to the chef anyway, but
mm-hmm.
he let her do her thing.
Yeah.
He took one bite and said, I'd like to talk to the chef.
And Amir is just like, let me handle it. I got this. He really doesn't. He needs to stop saying, let me do the talking,
mm-hmm.
because he kind of just bumbles around, you know, why they're there. And so Robin just has to say, where's my pig? He's like, wait, you want a pig? He's like, no, I want my pig.
Mm.
Where is my pig? I hear you have truffles coming on to the menu. You know, where's my truffle pig? And the chef doesn't want to answer his question, really. And then Amir's just like, tell him who you are. And he doesn't even have to say anything. He doesn't even have to look at him. He looks at him.
No, this is when, this is the moment where Rob makes eye contact.
Yeah.
He's like, and, okay, fine, I'll look up at you so you can recognize me, because I know you know me.
Yeah.
Because I know you.
I know you. I remember you. And I love that he remembers him.
The memory thing that we find out that this is just a character who has a great memory.
Oh yeah.
That's awesome.
Intent. He is excited. He's astounded. He's like, oh my goodness, Robin Feld's like, oh my goodness, you're in my restaurant. Like, I haven't seen you in like 15 years.
You've been off the scene for 10 years. And he goes, 15.
Yeah.
Or no, Amir says 15 actually.
Yeah. And he's just like, oh my God, I got to open up the best bottle of wine here. So they get wine and they start talking. And, you know, Robin's doing a little bit more digging. And then the chef reaches a wall where he's like, you know what? I respect you. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you probably don't remember who I am. And then he's like, no, I know who you are. I fired you because you kept overcooking the pasta. Like, having even that, like as good mm-hmm. as a memory of that, it, like, draws, you know, your person in even more. You know what I mean? Because now they feel special.
Yeah. And the chef is like, well, fuck. But he retreats back into this pre-written response about the truffle business being this exciting, expanding business mm-hmm. that everyone's everyone's so excited. He keeps repeating exciting.
Yeah. And how we need the best truffles. Mm-hmm. And so
it's the centerpiece of our winter harvest concept.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rob says, what is the concept here?
Yeah. And so he breaks it down. He's just like, it's about, you know, taking things that we're familiar with and making them unfamiliar. Taking the old and making it new.
And then he repeats, like, locally sourced ingredients.
Yeah.
They bring out the wine.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, this was made from someone just a couple miles away.
Mm-hmm. Rob is just like,
what was that?
Do you love?
You
he said, do you love cooking this? Mm. And he's go, yeah, it's exciting. He goes, exciting?
Yeah, and the chef keeps repeating, everyone loves the food.
Right.
Everyone's excited.
And then he goes, what do you want to do once you left my place? And he was like, you wanted to start a pub. And he was just like, ugh. The actor is so good because he's so like cheesy this whole time. But
you see that he has this deep... Like, he's almost repressed. Like, he's repressed this desire to have a pub with... Rob's like, and what was that signature dish you wanted? And this is the moment where the actor or the chef right away answers immediately.
Yeah, immediately.
It was like pretzel, mustard and pretzel or something.
Yeah. And it just lets you know so much about that character that this character kind of gave up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't forget about it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This is like, that pub is something that he really wanted to do. And he thought hard about. He had a whole menu and concept, and then he got crushed into doing this concept that is like really like, you know, high concept, but not true to who he is. And Rob breaks it down and just like, you know, like, you know, you're doing this thing for people, but they don't care about you because they don't know you. And so everything that everyone is saying about you is not real. None of it's real because they don't know who you are.
Because you're not real.
You're not real.
And now Robin gets to flip the thing that Edgar tried to say to you, like, you don't even exist.
You don't exist.
But no, Robin's very secure in his
and
realness and existence.
Nicolas Cage is really good. But the actor that's receiving these words is doing so much in his face.
Yeah.
With his smile, with his eyes, and just like... his slow regression into, you know, kind of being like, this is fake. I am fake. This is all fake. I hate this. I don't like this food. This is all crap. And they finally take a sip of the wine. Like they you know, have a toast or whatever. And he drinks the whole thing, his whole glass.
It's a chug. Yeah.
It's a chug. He's just like, wow.
And he's holding eye contact with Rob while he's doing it.
Yeah.
I like that.
He's been revitalized in some type of way. And the scene cuts before he gives Robin the information, but he does give him the information of who has his pig.
It's the guy that owns this restaurant.
Who is Amir's dad, Darius. So Amir is just like, I had no idea. I had no clue.
Was in Turner and Hooch. I could have mentioned him also.
Oh, yeah. I think he was. Who was he?
This guy is not in a lot of movies. Yeah. He must be theater.
Must be theater.
This was his first movie in a long time.
What's.
Interesting.
What's his name? David.
David Nell.
David Nell. Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that thing. You don't see a lot of screen credits, but they were so good. You know they must be theater.
Yeah, they got to be doing something else with
like,
that.
Like, speaking of Macbeth earlier, Catherine Turner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure everyone that watched that was like, who the fuck is that?
Who is that? The only, when I looked on her page, the only thing I noticed from her was Harry Potter, but then I didn't even remember her from Harry Potter because she was only in one. But yeah.
Theater.
He starts to kick his Corvette.
Yeah, Robin's kicking Amir's car.
Yeah.
Because he's blaming Amir for...
Yeah.
It's your father.
Yeah.
That's how... Yeah, it kind of makes sense.
And the unions broke off. He's like, I don't want to see your face again. He says... He gets his address from Amir, and then he's just like, all right, we're done. I don't want to see you again.
Mm-hmm.
Tough break for Amir. Who was like having a real connection with another man when he wasn't getting
figure.
Yeah, when he wasn't getting from his father.
Wow.
Also, while they're at the table, they're having this really good discussion, more so about how terrible of a father Darius is to Amir and how he doesn't support him. because
they're in the same industry, and Robin's like, why don't you work for your dad? And he says, I will eventually once I establish myself. And it's clear he's repeating something that his dad has told him.
Yeah. And Amir is kind of stuck in this place of fighting for his father's eye.
So now we get a bit of a reveal, a bit of a twist.
Mm-hmm.
We had been led to understand through a discussion between Amir and Rob that Amir's mother killed herself. But we see him visiting his mother, who is comatose in a hospital.
Yeah.
Actually, we see him standing outside the door. And when the nurse says, would you like to come in? He says no. But then we get the shot from inside the hospital room of him standing outside the doorway.
Looking horrified.
It's great. It's a great composition.
He is really sad because he wants his to him, his mother is dead because she's been, she's only alive because of a machine. Right. Yep. And he's just like, why won't he let you die? Why won't he let you go?
This is the other layer to the restaurant name.
Yeah.
Orpheus trying to bring her back to life.
Yeah, holding on
to her. Darius trying to bring his wife back to life. Mm-hmm. Or keep her alive, keep her around.
Mm-hmm. Not letting her go.
Not being okay with the natural order of things, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I take that last sentence back to, I don't know, different reasons why people would be kept on life support.
Yeah.
Don't want to make judgments there.
Mm-hmm. So, cut to from that very emotional scene, we see Darius talking about his son. He has no good words for his son. He thinks his son should be in an office somewhere, behind a desk, off to the side.
Once we hear from Darius,
mm-hmm.
it's clear he wasn't going to bring Amir into the business.
Yeah. However, everything that has happened in this movie is because of Amir. Amir had to be doing good for the pig to even be on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
So Amir was a success. He was a success. And his father did see that. But his father doesn't want him to be a part of this business.
Yeah,
and it's not even because he loves him or cares about him. He just doesn't want him in his business.
Yeah.
So he starts throwing money at Robin. He's just like, I'll give you $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 is where he ends up on.
And Robin says like, no very quickly after every offer. Yeah. And then it jumps to $15 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like Adam Arkin's laugh there. Because he knows what he's doing. And then there's a speech of like, you don't even know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you, Robin, you have no leverage.
Yeah.
You're in my world.
Yeah.
Everything. My son, the people that stole your pig, the restaurant, Edgar, that's all me. They're all in my orbit.
Mm-hmm.
In my loop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean,
Robin's going to prove him wrong.
Yeah, Robin is kind of powerless because he has no counter offer. He really can't do anything. This is not John Wick. He is not about to muscle his way back into getting this pig.
And it's not even an offer where it ends. It's just Darius saying, you have no leverage. There will be $25,000 at your little shack in the woods tomorrow.
Yeah.
For the pig.
That's it.
Get out.
Yeah. And he gets out. And when he steps out, Amir is waiting for him.
Yeah, offering him a ride, which is so nice.
Apologizes for telling his dad about him, because that's how this all started.
Yeah.
And Robin admits that he doesn't need his pig to find the truffles. That's not what this is about.
Yeah. The trees tell him.
Yeah.
And then when he says that line, because they're still just standing outside Darius's house, we get the shot. It's a beautiful house in probably like the fancy neighborhood in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
with like this big tree right in the middle,
mm-hmm.
like right in front of the front door, kind of.
Yeah.
So it's just like centered in that shot where he says trees, but it's like, obviously that's not the tree.
Yeah.
That tree's not telling him
yeah.
there's truffles.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck is that tree even doing there? Right?
What is it doing there?
It's the landscape.
Yeah.
It's landscape design.
Mm-hmm.
Just for show. It's not real.
No. He's doing this because he loves the pig.
And he wants her back.
And he wants her back. And that's it. And so he types. He types using a phone, which he's never done before.
Oh, yeah. He says, Rob says, can you have something to write with? And Amir hands him the phone.
Yeah. Gives him an ingredient list. And Amir is just like, I can't get all this stuff. And he's just like, use my name. And there's this moment. I was like, it's like a breakthrough moment
mm-hmm.
for them to.
Yeah.
And he's like, you want me to use your name? And he's like, yeah, use my name.
Both characters are kind of
yeah.
meeting in the middle a little bit.
Yeah.
Because Robin was so uncomfortable with Amir using his name every other time.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, he understands his influence. He knows that yeah. it'll help.
Yeah. And
even though he might not think his name is real, or, yeah. I don't know.
There's something even more in that like father-son connection happening there, because a mere father would never let him use his name, probably.
Hmm. Yeah, and I guess like people take the names of their yeah. fathers.
Yeah, to like build themselves up.
Yeah.
And Amir has just had no luck with that. And so that's why this moment's so big to him, because he's like, wait, you want me to use your name? Yeah. Like, wow, okay. I can get things done.
Yeah, and that big character moment ushers us into chapter 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that the chapter ends on like a...
An up,
and like, look at these two characters getting closer to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And closer to understanding each other.
Mm-hmm.
So chapter 3 is called A Bird, A Bottle, and A Salted Baguette. That's the...
I didn't get it until now.
It's like
now.
A very low-key way of describing the meal.
That
Robin... I can just say, this is the plan. We're gonna recreate the meal that you told me about your father and mother having at my restaurant
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Very low key way of describing that meal is a bird, a bottle, and the salted baguette.
Very to the point.
Very modest. Yeah.
Yeah. Like not descriptive at all.
It's not locally sourced chicken, farm raised.
No, it's a bird, a bottle, and.
Literally a bottle. It is, because in the next scene, it's Amir acquiring said bottle. It is a very special, fancy bottle of wine.
Mm hmm.
That I'm sure that the waitress at Eurydice's,
mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is,
Eurydice's,
would have 12,000 words for.
Right.
Amir
gets the bottle of wine using Robin Feld's name.
One last note, sorry, mm-hmm. about the title card.
Mm-hmm.
The image we see it over is the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Right after that character moment where they're building
bridges. Oh, building the bridge.
The bridge
to each other.
To Robin was this horrifying thing coming into the city
mm-hmm.
and into the world. But now, you know, building bridges, acceptance,
mm-hmm.
Two people coming together.
Yeah.
To cross muddy waters. Okay, now I'm sure you've got a lot of stuff to say about this meal. Oh, first we need to shop.
Right. So yeah, he gets there. He gets the bottle of wine. And then he learns a little bit more about Robin
mm-hmm.
and we learn a little bit more through him
and about Lori
and who Lori was. Well, they don't say Lori was his wife. They don't really need to say that. We just know that it was someone very important to him, and that when he dies, there's a place for his name beside hers.
Yeah, it was the mausoleum
mm-hmm.
where her ashes were.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that Rob gave everything to, that he had all the bottles of wine
and yeah,
ostensibly everything. She's saving a place for him.
Mm-hmm.
And now we see Rob getting the salted baguette from his former baker.
I really like this scene because it's shot far away. Like the whole scene is one shot.
Through the window?
I don't think it's through the window. It's like in the corner of the room.
Yeah, I'd have to rewatch it because the scene ends with him noting that there's no curtains on the windows as there used to be, and
there's a cut.
Says it was Lori's idea. I know we get the wide shot seeing the whole restaurant.
Yeah.
And that it's better this way. People can see right in through the clear window. You don't have the walls, the curtains, the barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe it's not shot through a window, but it is like if you were passing, walking down that street and looking in, that's what you would see.
Mm-hmm.
And the distance from which you would see them just sitting at a table.
But yeah, it's shot from like this far away wide angle, but it's so intimate and small, and just these two people that haven't seen each other in a long time sitting across a table from one another breaking bread. He asks her if she makes the salted baguette the way she used to make it, I would say 15 years ago.
Same recipe.
And she goes, yeah, I do. And he asks her some. And it's just like this moment of him like picking through the baguettes, picking the ones that he wants. He takes more than one. And then that's when he compliments her on taking down the curtains on his way out. And she says, Lori wanted it that way.
I think the more than one was like a pastry, right?
Yeah, and it was a pastry.
He asks for a second one. Mm-hmm. And he picks up one and he puts it down and he sees a better one and gets that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the very next scene, we see him pass it to his new friend, Amir.
There was something about the care in picking the right pastry for Amir.
And the reaction shot of Amir being like, oh, you're giving me a thing?
Yeah.
It's just the act of feeding folks is one of love. And that's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to sneak back into Daddy's house.
Yeah. And
cook.
Together.
Yeah.
Amir's not much of a cook, but I mean, the great Robin Fels is going to lead him.
Yeah.
Tell him what to do. Show him what to do.
This is a sex scene.
I don't think this is a sex scene. Oh, man. I didn't.
Let me explain.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's them fucking.
Okay.
Though it is them consummating their friendship.
Okay.
By cooking together. But the way it's shot, the music, the way
it's lit.
It's like shot in like a montage style.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very like lit almost by candlelight, it seems. There's no candlelight, but
they're cooking
that,
in
it's
the
that
dark.
Color. It's kind of.
It's very moody.
And it's intimate and it has the feel that a sex scene would have in terms of what it does with the pacing of the movie, how it's like, we didn't need to see them cooking, just like you don't need to see them fucking, but between the two characters, it's this moment that brings them together.
Yeah.
That they share. I'm not saying they're in love or anything, but
no, I was just saying I did not like have that thought at all.
Oh, I totally, the music is so, it's not sensual, but it's intimate.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the piano and the strings, and it's like, this is emotional.
Mm-hmm. And it's cool because it's Amir having this male blonde and also cooking this meal that made his mom very happy.
Yeah. Oh, that's like some shit Anthony would do in Queer Eye.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to help you make this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, I learned is mostly Antony's PA on Queer Eye.
Oh, interesting.
He apparently doesn't do that much himself.
It's just this really good shot of them two kind of back to back looking down at what they're doing. And they're both in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the last shot of them cooking.
If you replace the word cooking with fucking in that last sentence you said, nothing.
Shut up.
I'm just saying it would make sense.
Oh.
Listener, if you listen to this podcast on one of those apps that has like a 15-second rewind button, just hit it. And then when he says cooking, just say in your head, fucking.
Oh.
You'll know what I mean.
Anyway, this is where Amir becomes a ripe parsimon. This is maybe where we see his most growth, and it's very small. It seems almost, you know, whatever. But he calls his father to dinner. He's like, "We cooked for you," and his father says, "You can leave."
First, he says it from behind the sliding glass doors.
Yes. And then he opens it once he's told to leave, and he's like, "Hey, we cooked for you." And a more assertive, direct turn to his father. It's the first time he's ever been that direct.
Yeah.
And his father comes out and joins the two of them for dinner.
Yeah. My initial thought on our first watch, because I was still holding out the hope or the expectation that this was John Wick-esque or revenge. I thought it was poison. Right? I was like, okay, he's getting poisoned now. We're poisoning Adam Arkin.
No, I did not think that.
Really?
Okay. No. I think I knew what was happening with the meal, and I thought that that was really cool.
I just thought that meal was the only meal they'd be able to convince him to eat.
Oh, it just made me really excited because this was his way of fighting. You know, food is his weapon, and not in a poisonous way, but in a, I'm gonna like dig up some emotions you thought you had buried. Like, I'm gonna dig them up through food, because it is a food.
Can you
picture?
Can you describe the intricacies of Adam Arkin's performance when he takes that first bite? Because there's stuff happening. I can't really describe it though. There's stuff happening that he shows with his performance.
Yeah, it happens pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's like that instantaneous.
He takes a bite and he's just like, "Oh wow." And then he takes another bite and he's in. He's in. He grabs the wine. He does that thing where, you know, he
swirls it.
And he's like, smells it, and he's like instantly back there. And then he starts to break down. It's like he was so serious and so masculine and threatening. And then he took a bite of that food and he was softened.
He was a human being.
He was a human being again.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't this facade. He was having a real experience.
No offense to pigs.
And yeah, there was just something about weaponizing food in a loving way, in a way where it makes you feel the way you felt when you first ate it. And it brings you back to the person that you ate it with. And I think that's more damaging than anything, considering the fact that he won't let his wife go, and she's technically only alive on a machine. You know, it's real, just like emotional warfare through food.
Psychic.
Yeah,
it's the psychic power.
Like they say, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, and that turns out to be true.
Yeah,
because he's so softened after he eats the meal. I mean, he does yell to get out, like he wants him out, because he's...
I love this. He gets up after the meal and he goes straight to the whiskey.
Because he wants to wash it out. He wants to wash that flavor out of his mouth, that taste,
and he's like,
that memory away.
Yeah, and he's like, "What the fuck are they doing to me? How did they get to my core?"
Yeah, like, why are you doing this to me?
Like, his performance shows that that character's like very raw in that moment. And he's trying to get back to his face that he has, that he wears. So he like chugs the scotch a couple shots and then starts yelling again to be like, it's my house, my property,
my rules, my house, my rules.
I'm a man. Yeah, yeah. My coffee. and he repeats again, like, "What? Why are you doing this?" But I love that this time, no one answers except for me out loud. He wants his pig back.
He wants his pig back. That's what this is all about.
It's that simple.
And Robin is just like, I remember every meal I ever served and every person I've served. And that's it. He doesn't say, I remember you and your wife and the night you guys came. Da, da, da. He's like, no, I remember everything.
And it means something.
And it means something. It was really, it was important to me.
Yeah. So this is where Darius looks
heartbroken.
He's mad that he has to now tell the truth.
Yeah, because he wished he could have just gave him the money and then that would have been
and
it.
Not have to worry about and him not come again, clean about what change really his happened. Ways or consider yeah.
Yeah.
And what happened is that the pig didn't survive.
The handlers were too rough.
Mm-hmm.
And on the second watch, when I was listening to the pig cry, I was just like, oh man, like they're being too rough with the pig.
Yeah.
The pig is gonna die. Mm. The pig is hurt actually while he's screaming, screaming like that because they probably broke something. Mm. I was like, oh man, that's really sad.
Yeah, this is a much better ending than if Nick Cage poisoned
right?
the dad and then walked away
and
then like found the pig in a cage somewhere and then walked off
with the pig. Yeah,
that's a movie.
Yeah,
this is a film. Because now he has to face his grief. They all have to face their grief.
Yeah, and he drops to his knees. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one complaint I have, and I had it the first time we were watching it because I was like tired.
Mm-hmm.
It's still only a 91-minute movie, but I still felt this way on the rewatch. The ending drags a little bit. After we get the explanation about the pig, they could wrap it up in 2 minutes, but they take like 5 or 6.
Yeah. I think they keep the pace that they had, pretty much. Because they're getting back out into nature, so it's slowing down again.
That's true. And they do need the return to nature and to... Okay.
Yeah. And so it's just like,
a little too slow.
You know, all the characters need a moment to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
And
you have Amir sleeping in his car.
Yeah, Amir and Robin are going to continue their working relationship.
Yeah.
In fact, Robin reaches out his hand to shake Amir's hand.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of respect has been gained between the two parties. And Amir, sleeps in his car because what a day.
Yeah.
What a day he's had. I like that it's also a callback to the radio sequence earlier where he turns on his car and the radio's on and then he turns off his radio.
Ah.
Yeah. And it's like the guy is talking again, talking in the same way about something else and he turns it off and he just needs some quiet.
Yeah. The way I took that the first time and I didn't even notice that. But I love that. It shows the growth. And I like when characters like learn something from another character and then start doing their thing to show that. It's like, dude, you're in nature. Turn David Attenborough off. You don't need him telling you. Just experience it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I got from him. And that's what he learned.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like people listen to David Attenborough or watch those shows to feel connected to it.
Yeah.
But we're in it.
Yeah, we're in it.
Even
we're
though
there.
We
it's real.
Like to pretend we're separate or kings not a,
yeah.
of it. King of the jungle.
Yeah.
King. As Amir says to himself in the mirror.
Yeah.
Which isn't real.
Which isn't real. Not the real him. Robin walks home and it gets even slower because it's going back into nature.
Yeah.
That's a
good point.
You know, at the beginning you said it starts with him dicking his hands in the water to wash his face. And so it happens again with him digging in the water to wash his face.
And he gets home and we didn't mention the tape that he played for like 2 seconds that implied that he had a dead wife in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But he turns it off after 2 seconds. But now at the end, he's ready to listen to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it it's her talking, but then he keeps listening, and it's her playing a cover of Bruce Springsteen's I'm on Fire.
For
his birthday, mm-hmm. which plays over the end credits.
Yeah. It's really sweet, and it's really sad. It's really somber. Mm. And
Do you agree that Pig is a film?
I do agree that Pig is a film.
Okay, cool. I just needed to say it.
Oh, needed me to say it because I was holding out.
Film if we didn't decide if it's a movie or a film.
Yeah, it is for all the reasons you said.
Yeah. See, it's easier this way. Now I don't have to be like, yeah, you know, because I said that. Because
I said that thing. Remember that moment?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any more thoughts on Pig?
Any more thoughts on Pig? No.
Do you expect Nicolas Cage to show up during the end credits of that new Channing Tatum movie, Dog? Because they're going to do like an animal cinematic universe.
That'll be funny.
Hmm.
That'll be funny.
Yeah.
No. No, I really enjoyed this, and people should watch it and watch it for the performance. And I think it is a happy ending in a weird way. It doesn't end the way you want it to, which is like that fairy tale ending where mm-hmm. everyone is like happy and he has the pig. But that's not real. And I also I think it ends with the characters growing a lot. I think they have a lot of growth. Robin is able to listen to his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Amir is able to stand up to his father.
Yeah, I'm really glad you picked this one. I enjoyed it on the first watch. I thought it was good.
Mm-hmm.
But... yeah, when I just watching it for this, taking notes, really contemplating it, mm-hmm. helped me see its greatness.
Yeah.
It's a great film.
It's a great film with a great emotional pull.
Can't wait to see what this writer-director does next.
Yeah.
Yeah, really impressive that he took, like, ingredients. In a way, Pig is a deconstruction. of something familiar, but presented to us in a new way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I better wrap this up before I keep getting cute.
Oh,
we will return.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
This isn't just the Valentine's Day. I know we were on hiatus.
We were doing holiday things.
We did holiday and Christmas, yeah. And now it's Valentine's Day. Guess what? Pig isn't really a Valentine's Day movie. It's a Valentine's Day film.
There you go.
But we'll be back in 2 weeks. We're going to try to get back to our bi-weekly schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be back with another one on movie.
Movie.
Film.
Film.
Oink.
I was going to make like tree noise or something.
Yeah, I was going to make pig noises, so I did.